call fund call it to order, but we think it's better than hearing from the, here's what I'd like to do. We're going to have the PCA go first with their bonding request. And then Representative Bunn has a bill that just got numbered today. It resides in finance, but I'd like her to be able to come up and talk about how that interacts with the PCA bonding request on the Washington County landfill. After that, we would have the three other bills that are before us. One is on groundwater monitoring wells, the Albert Lea landfill, and then beneficial reuse of wastewater. What we do with the PCA bonding request is report those to the full Environmental Finance Committee. We are having a hard time, you know, having another meeting time where we actually can wrap these all together and then, you know, the motion from Environmental Finance. So we'll just report them directly, and then we would act on those other three bills. We do have to be out of here by 3:45, so brevity is always good. But why don't we start with the PCA and begin with their capital budget request. If it gets a little too warm, we have this magic climate control thing called a chair to hold the door open behind it. So if it gets too hot, we'll take some action. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Christine Johnson. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for the Pollution Control Agency. And before the committee today, we have two proposals for you. The first is $9.6 million to provide a grant to Pope Douglas County for the construction of a third line at their existing solid waste resource recovery facility. And to present that proposal is Rick Patra. He is the manager of community development within the Prevention and Assistance Division at PCA.
Good morning.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Et cetera.
Members of the committee. As Christine pointed out, my name is Rick Patra, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to present to you today about our solid waste processing facilities capital assistance program. And it's a mouthful, so throughout this presentation, I hope to be referring to it simply as CAP. I know you want to get into some of the numbers, and I did number these pages. They were slides, part of a PowerPoint presentation. So I could refer to them as the page numbers, or I'll say next slide or something on that order.
That works great.
I have a lot of numbers and data that we assembled, but I thought it was going to be important to provide a little bit of history and background about the CAP process, so I'll try to be brief with that, especially in light of the time constraints. The CAP program began in 1980 as part of the Waste Management Act, and it was designed to encourage and assist cities and counties develop and implement integrated solid waste management projects to meet the goals of the Act. The goals of the Waste Management Act is to foster integrated solid waste management systems that manage waste to its highest and best use based on the characteristics of the waste stream, thus reducing or minimizing our long-term care costs, liabilities, and perpetual care related to landfilling. The Act lists preferred waste management practices in order of preference, and it goes like this: waste reduction and reuse, waste recycling, composting of yard waste and food waste, waste recovery through mixed municipal solid waste composting or incineration, and then landfilling with energy, and then landfilling without energy recovery. CAP is a statewide program. As you can see from the map on the right-hand side of that slide, CAP has been instrumental in assisting our local units of government throughout the state to improve their systems. The CAP program is also meant to be a catalyst for regional cooperation, with special consideration for those projects that serve more than one county. So the greater number of counties participating, the greater the funding that's available for the project, thereby helping them with their economies of scale. I'm on the next slide. There's a number of benefits of the CAP program. It builds state, county, and city partnerships. Developing strong partnerships between the state and the local units of government are critical when addressing waste management issues. The PCA works to support local governments evolve their systems through a variety of tools, and one of those tools is the CAP program. CAP supports both the front-end technologies and those technologies that are preferred based on the hierarchy that are needed to deal with the reality that we still have waste that need to be handled. CAP doesn't just support waste energy projects. They have been instrumental in providing financial assistance on recycling facilities, household hazardous waste facilities, composting facilities, and material recovery facilities. Essentially, CAP helps our local units of government recover resources and convert to better technologies quicker and faster. There have been significant state and local investments. Since 1980, we've issued over 92 grants to varying projects across the state, like the, for instance, that last map that I showed you. You can see the distribution. Referring to this map, the state has awarded $52 million in CAP grants, while our local partners have invested approximately $188 million, a 3-to-1 ratio. These investments have yielded key partnerships with our local units of government to advance the goals of the Waste Management Act by reducing our environmental risks associated with landfilling. And CAP creates jobs. Page 4. The governor's 2008 capital budget recommendation for the CAP program is $9,605,000 for the counties of Hope Douglas for expanding their resource recovery facility. It's located in Alexandria, Minnesota. It's in Douglas County. The funded activities include final design, engineering, and architectural plans, land and structures, waste processing equipment, and off-site roads and parking and landscaping. The total cost of the project is a little over $19 million. The map on the left shows the regional cooperation potential for the project. I've got a colored one here, and I'm thinking that your black and white is in the dark shaded area. Those are the counties of Pope Douglas. And the project itself would encompass up to 7 counties. So in addition to Pope Douglas, it includes the counties of Benton, Grant, Sherburne, Stearns, and Stevens. Next slide, please. Page 5. The Pope Douglas Solid Waste Joint Powers Board was formed in 1983 to explore options to own and operate a solid waste management system that would meet the long-term needs of the residents in those counties. It was voted on by the residents of both counties to build the waste energy facility versus a new landfill, thus supporting the goals of the Act. They built the waste energy facility in 1986. They began operations in 1987. Since it opened, 476,000 tons of waste have been processed. In 1988, it was a little over 17,000 tons that year, and this year, last year in 2007, 31,671 tons of process. They began a countywide recycling program in 1988, and they have a current recycling rate of 44%. They began a household hazardous waste program in 1992. In 1993, 441 residents dropped items off. And in 2007, over 2,000 folks dropped off items, so you can see the growth in the popularity. Interesting, almost as many people also remove items from the popular exchange that they have. Lots of these household hazardous waste programs have exchanges where you can pick up product. People bring in paint, but it's the wrong color, and there's many gallons, and other people can take those products and take them for free. And quite importantly, this last bullet that's on your PowerPoint, They built the waste energy upfront materials recovery and recycling facility in the year 2003. 97,000 tons of material was processed from 04 to 07. From 04 to 07, almost 7,000 tons of that material was recovered for recycling. The MRF, as it's called, was added to further separate and recover materials from the waste stream that would otherwise be subject to manage through the waste to energy facility. I want to point out that not all of Minnesota's waste energy facilities have a MRF, but Pope Douglas took it upon themselves to put a MRF in to improve the operation of the facility, and they financed it on their own. It has a number of benefits. It removes harmful items from MSW to help clean up the emissions. Examples of this would be mercury thermostats that come in oil filters, how hazardous waste, if you can identify it, and gypsum, batteries, fluorescent tubes, electronics, CRTs, and all those types of problem materials. It reduces items that cause flag on the incinerator grates, and it allows the waste energy facility to accept approximately 10% more MSW at the gate. The MRF removes approximately 7% by weight of the material that comes in as recyclable material, which allows the facility to operate beyond their permitted capacity. Next slide. Page 6. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Expansion plans for this project. Projections show that Pope Douglas demand will reach 120 tons per day by the year 2015. The area is experiencing growth in population and waste generation, like a lot of areas across the state. It's becoming a destination point more and more. There's lakes, there's tourism, and businesses are continuing to grow there. The expansion plans to expand permitted capacity from 80 tons per day to 120 tons per day by using their existing equipment to its fullest capabilities, to add a third incinerator with 120 ton per day capacity for a total capacity of 240 tons per day. The third combustor would add 40,000 pounds of additional steam for industrial or other users or generating electricity for sale. And the 240 ton per day capacity would meet Pope Douglas's demand through the year 2030.
Okay, stop you there for a second. Mr.
Patrick,
Representative,
did
you have a question?
Well, maybe it's just that you're getting ready to go into recycling rates, but is this 6,800 tons of recovered for recycling all that was recovered, or is this just an additional amount that was recovered for recycling?
Mr.
Patrick. Mr. Chair and Representative Wiggins, this is the material that was just taken out by the MRF. This does not include the material on the curbside collection program.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, this is the front-end material recovery facility where you're taking recyclable materials off the line before they go in the incinerator. Okay, go ahead.
Page 7. The board employs 31 full-time and 4 part-time employees at the waste energy facility, the MRF, and the household hazardous waste and the recycling center combined. The expansion would add approximately 8 employees, mainly at the waste energy facility and the MRF. The expansion would also continue to directly promote landfill abatement and expanding the energy market would continue to support the goals of the Act and provide more opportunities because of its industrial location to maximize the use of their steam. The map on the right, and I'm going to look at the colored version of this, you can see the Pope Douglas Waste Energy Facility on the far right and in the middle. Their main suppliers are 3M, Alexandria, and the Douglas County Hospital. 3M expansion plans are to increase their steam use by a factor of 8-fold, and they have already broken ground on that expansion. And the Douglas County Hospital plans to expand as well, which would require more steam use. And the Technical College is interested in steam for their new addition and possibly their entire campus. And the timing for their expansion would be about 2010. Next slide, please. Page 8. This slide shows where the current waste is going and how much tonnage of recycling is occurring based on the 2006 SCORE data. SCORE is the acronym used to get data from counties to report on how much recycling is occurring in each county. And we don't have our 2007 yet because it takes about 3-4 months for that information to come in. I'm going to look at the bigger slide here. So these are all the participating counties that would be part of this project on the far left. I apologize for the facility. You can see it's a little off-center there. The counties bring their waste to a variety of different facilities. And you can see the MSW generation that combined with recycling, which would make up their total waste. Overall, 87,000 tons of waste was landfilled in 2006. And approximately 94,000 tons was processed in 2006. So about half of the region's waste, with all seven collectively looking at it that way, is currently being processed, and half of it is being landfilled. Next slide, please. Page 9. This chart I put together just to show those receiving landfills that are on the previous page. And three out of the five landfills are going out of state. Approximately 35% of the waste, or about a third of it, is sent out of state. And two of the five have energy recovery, and the three other collect the methane and flare it.
Mr. Patra, you could explain to the committee what energy recovery means at a landfill. Because it may come up later on another thing.
Okay.
I'm not sure everybody knows what that means.
The methane is collected and recovered and used for energy purposes.
Okay. And then the passive methane, these landfills cannot just let the stuff vent out. They have to flare it. So at least it turns the CO2 compared to methane, which is 20 times worse. But, okay.
Page 10. This chart shows the county's current rates for recycling. The recycling rates are pretty high in these counties. Pope Douglas at 44%, and the Stearns and Benton at 62%, Sherburne 46%. And Grant and Stevens, which are counties that are more rural in nature, they're at 33 and 30, basically. I want to point out that there's a 5% credit given for yard waste composting, and each of those counties met the criteria to receive that 5% credit. They offer opportunities throughout the counties to recover that waste. And they get a 3% credit for source reduction efforts, and all but one of those counties receive that. The recycling, we don't know, because we aren't sure how much the facility is going to bring in terms of waste, but so I put arrows in this column to depict that the front end MRF that I described earlier would have a very significant impact on increasing these recycling rates if the other counties participated in this. I had mentioned earlier that 7% by weight of the waste that does come in is recovered for recycling, and so although the exact amounts aren't known, because of the amount of waste, we can say with some certainty that all these recycling rates will go up if the waste goes to that facility. And then the last column depicts the waste energy capacity and where likely increases would occur if the county expanded. Slide 11, page 11. We assessed the draft goals coming out of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group called MCAG, determined if this project would be compatible with those goals. The first goal, residuals management, by 2015, to achieve a 35% reduction in the landfilling of organic waste through organics recovery or waste energy. The project would meet this goal. The goal is meant to ensure that any organics not directed under organics management would not be landfilled but sent to waste energy for recovery and thus reducing landfilling by 35%. Waste energy facilities. By 2020, pre-process all the waste entering waste energy facilities to remove recoverable materials and enhance energy recovery. This project would meet this goal too, or is. The goal is meant to ensure that the Pope Douglas facility already has the MRF in place, as I talked about quite a bit. And they plan to expand the hours of the operation and they have staff as more counties participate on that. The county invested their own finances again towards that MRF. Bullets 3 and 4 are related. And so I'm just going to read both and then just describe some aspects about that, how we assess that. By 2025, develop alternative management methods for materials not managed through AFW-7 composting. And then recycling and composting, I pulled out the time one of the technical working group's goal. Achieve a recycling rate of 50% by 2011 and 60% by 2025, and a composting rate of 10% by 2012 and 15% by 2020, for a total diversion rate of 75% by the year 2025. Being that the proposed expansion would be getting full around the year 2025, it's expected with the planning in 2030, and if the other counties become part of the system, it would benefit all involved to begin planning and implementing programs to reduce its waste stream to accommodate more materials. And compostable waste and increasing the recycling rates are logical targets to aim at. Counties across the state will have to consider economies of scale when developing strategies and cooperate collectively in meeting these statewide draft goals. From a rural yet growing perspective, if you look at these counties involved, you have counties like Grant and Stevens that are very rural, and then Stearns that's growing like mad in Alexandria. We believe that this project plays a role in meeting the statewide draft goals. Just like with recycling rates across the state, some counties are going to do better than others. For example, in Grant County, you have a very aging population. You don't have any large business, and you don't have a lot of industry. And so the recycling rates, and they can put in the same level of effort as other counties, and they just simply can't have as good as rates. But nonetheless, all contribute to meeting the statewide goals. Next slide, please. Page 12. Providing bonding for this project offers a number of benefits for Minnesota. As discussed in the previous slide, the project is poised to meet the goals recommended by MCAG, the climate change goals, and the Waste Management Act goals. Tipping fees would be reduced. Funding for this project will keep the tipping fee low so that outside counties, funding for this project will keep the tipping fee low so that outside counties can participate versus landfilling at a cheaper price. Because the facility needs to keep the rates competitive, they can't put the capital cost of the expansion on the tipping fee. The tipping fees cover the operation and maintenance costs to run the facility. If it's not funded, the capital costs would have to be put on the property taxes of Pope Douglas. So without the funding, the county will need to take a hard look to determine whether the expansion is practical at this time. If they wait until the year 2014, it's going to cost an additional $1.6 million to complete the expansion. The 2014 date is important to note because projections show that the facility is going to reach its 120 ton per day capacity by the year 2015. It expands regional partnerships and keeps the waste local. Expanding regional partnerships, together they can achieve higher goals through economies of scale. And by keeping the waste local versus sending the waste to alternative landfills, and based on a distance of 110 to 130 miles to the closest landfill, on average, 460,000 round-trip truck miles would be avoided, and 63,000 gallons of diesel or gasoline would not be used. Industrial location of the facility allows the opportunity to maximize their use of steam, and it offers a renewable energy source. From the MKIG Agriculture, Forestry, and Waste Management Technical Working Group, the 9 waste energy facilities in Minnesota process 3,800 tons of MSW per day for industrial heat and electrical generation. And the total energy reclaimed since 1982, when these facilities first began to come online, is the equivalent of 12 million tons of coal. The Pope Douglas facility contributes to that offset. Regarding waste assurance, as part of the final application phase, the agency will look at the project for criteria, including waste assurance. We're going to want to take a look at the waste assurance mechanism to ensure that it maintains the benefits of the proposed project. In closing, we're recommending this project because the project meets the criteria of the Capital Assistance Program, the intent of the Waste Management Act, and helps us achieve the MK goals. And if we're ever going to begin moving away from landfilling as a primary means of managing waste, after recycling and other abatement initiatives are put in place, this project offers that opportunity. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my last slide is our contact information, and that concludes my presentation.
Great. I have a couple questions, and keep things going. I'll see if other folks have questions. Representative Moe and Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on slide 11, just a technical question. In the very last bullet point, you say recycling and composting for a total diversion rate of 75% by 2025. Is that, you mean that composting rate is 75%? Do you mean recycling rate? I assume you're not just adding 60% and 60%, because those are talking about different things. I mean, that's not...
There would be recycling plus composting, 60% plus 15. Diversion of municipal solid waste.
So, yeah, but 75% then of composting, or 75% of...
With municipal solid waste, recycling and composting is all part of a bigger... pot of stuff.
So 75% of the total that's going to municipal will be taken out because it's going to... Thank you, Chair Gardner, for your answering my question.
Other questions?
No, that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first question is, you are saying if these are MKIG draft goals and they're questions there, because MKIG never got to what we really need to do in Minnesota to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So we're going to have to do better in every category in order to get the job done. When I was listening to you talk about these recovery estimates, you were talking, using words like cooperation,
are you not going to plan to require as part of the draft permit that each county meets certain goals in recycling and composting?
Mr. Chair, Representative...
Mr. Patra, it's a little screwy tasting we have to do, so go ahead.
I think the advantage that regional cooperation has is that those counties that have additional struggles because they don't have infrastructure, and what I mean by infrastructure is that they don't have a lot of business or a lot of industry. They don't have county resources, staff, financial differences and things like that, like county like Grant and Stevens, that other counties that cooperate regionally, like Stearns and Benton and some of those counties that are growing, they can contribute. If they're doing 60, 70, 80%, they can help those other counties regionally come up with the regional goals. You know, looking at it that way.
Representative McGinnis, a follow-up on that?
Yes, but that wasn't my question. My question was, are you going to set limits or not just goals? We're talking about just goals. Or as a part of permitting this facility, will you require certain levels of recycling and composting on a year-by-year basis?
Mr. Patrick?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ordinez, thanks for clarifying. Goals of that nature aren't required per se, but each of the counties do have to complete a solid waste management plan individually. Each are going to be required to meet whatever goals in the Waste Management Act are in place. The facility itself, for it to operate and produce the energy and have efficiencies of scale, are going to, and just to meet the waste generation demands, are going to have to search for ways to reduce their waste. And so for whatever participating county comes in, they're going to have to It's going to be to their advantage to do that. There's only so much capacity at the facility, and so they have to reduce their waste.
Well,
that's not true, because they can take it to landfill. My basic question, I think you have the answer to this, is you are not going to require, as part of the permit, that certain recycling and composting rates are met by each county.
Is that the statement or question?
Well, that was, unless he disagrees with that statement, but that's what I heard.
And
that's the end of my question.
And then I need to move the rest of the clerk.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Banky, did you want to just chip in and read it along?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Banky with the Pollution Control Agency. Just quickly, as part of the application for the CAP grant itself, they will be required to meet certain set goals for recycling in order to be eligible for the amount of funding that they have proposed. They have to exceed the SCORE goals that are set in statute in order to do that, and so they would be held to those goals as part of the application. Not necessarily as part of the permit, but as part of the funding package that we would put together in the application.
Representative
Deans. Well, that's not particularly impressive, because our goals have not been upgraded for 10 years. And they don't certainly meet the carbon reduction standards right now. So that's not a particularly impressive statement.
Mr. Chairman, just quickly, the recycling goals that we provided in the chart, we want to just demonstrate how far they are exceeding the state goals with this system, just so you can see that the integrated system goes well beyond what we have set, and we do probably need to look at those goals. Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the right place to ask the question, but since we're talking about landfills, and Elk River is on here as one of them.
Is that a closed landfill? Mr. Patrick, I think he answers it's a working landfill.
No, yeah, it is. Mr. Chair, Representative Elk River is an active open landfill right now.
I have a question. Tell me if this is the right place to not concern anybody, but I believe Elk River is where they're taking the arsenic from my neighborhood, the soil and the metal arsenic that's polluting our ground all over. Is that right?
Mr. Petra?
I have to defer that to my colleagues. I don't know.
I think someone could probably give that to Representative Clark. I think. My guess is it's coming from Rosemount or Elk River.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, we do have some members here from the Closed Landfill Program who may be able to answer your questions in the second part of this presentation.
I don't know if it's closed. I was wondering, upriver, they're taking it out downriver, and then maybe it's coming back downriver. I'm just trying to figure out.
We would be happy to get that information for you by the end of the day.
Well, one of the reasons I ask is, when we're talking about gold and so on here, like this is a federal cleanup shop, EPA, federal EPA is paying for it, and I understand the biggest expense is the landfill cost, and I'm just trying to understand, and that arsenic comes off of my front yard and goes up to the landfill, maybe in Elk River, which is where I think it's going.
If you want to see the industrial waste cells, either in Rosemount or Elk River, it's a fun tour. I'm sure some folks can get you to see it. But
my understanding is it's not considered a hazardous waste. It's being put into a landfill.
In a municipal fund, okay.
I'd just like to know what that does in terms of. So if this isn't the right place to ask it, I guess I would really like to know a little bit more about that. I think somebody here knows, doesn't it?
I'd sort of like to get to the next project by 3 o'clock, so would you be able to track that down
to
the Rosemount Clark and give us some copies?
Absolutely.
That would be great. I had a couple questions for you. When I did look at the list of where waste is currently going, the disposal facilities, the conclusion I was kind of drawing is that you're going to take waste that is already being burned in Perham in Otterdale County and in Elk River at their RDF and waste energy facility, and that the private haulers who have large transfer capability and large out-of-state landfills are probably going to continue to do their own thing. Is there some other dynamic going on here? I saw an article in the Monticello paper or somewhere or the Perham newspaper that Representative Simpson and Senator Scogin were at Perham, and they were quoted as saying they heard that needed more waste there. So are we robbing Peter to pay Paul here for one facility to another?
Mr. Chair, I just read that article myself today, I have been part of no discussions that would indicate that Perham is going to be in a shortage situation on waste. I think there's plenty of waste to go around, but I haven't been part of any conversation like that.
I also noticed that the landfills here, these are the private ones, the Allied, BFI, and waste management ones. What enticement would you give them to bring their waste? I mean, a lot of it's going from the Tri-County area in St. Cloud. It's not leaping out at me that we're going to be moving a lot of waste from landfills to waste energy. That's all I'm observing anyway in the few minutes I've looked at this. But actually, we'll move on to another question, because we could beat this one to death and we need to get moving. At 9.6 million, I think that is roughly 1% of the proposed bonding bill. I think the whole bonding bill is going to be roughly $965 million, and this is the biggest cap request that I think that the state has considered or would approve for the last 10 years, I guess. I don't think the cap budget has ever been more than $3 or $4 million. And I think we're all on the Environmental Finance Committee feeling the stress of other requests. We heard probably 25 trail requests yesterday, and feels like the walls are closing in where we have to figure out how to make choices. How would you rate this as a priority? I mean, you have a crisis, I think, in Washington County landfill, and I'm just curious how you think that would compare, because we are going to have to make some tough choices.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Petra.
what makes it so difficult is that, on the one hand, we're talking about trying to advance solid waste management in Minnesota, and on the other hand, you know, it's about trying to deal with issues that bad decisions in the past, and you know, perpetual care. And so, answering that question is it's not on the same playing field. I'm not able to answer it, you know, with the same thought in mind. And so, it's sort of that idea of paying you now or paying you later. And so it's very difficult to answer that question because it's so philosophical.
We can have a cup of coffee and catch philosophy on that one. I appreciate that, and Mr. Petra, I know that we gave you a whole bevy of questions last week, and I think you cut short some other things, and I really appreciate the time you spent on that. I thought if we have no other questions, we'd just go on to the other bonding request from the PCA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Come again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, next we have the governor's request for $15 million to address a serious public health issue by requesting funds to clean up Washington County.
Go ahead. If you state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Lewis, and I manage the closed landfill program for the MPCA. I'll try and walk through some of the background things fairly quickly to leave a little bit more time for discussions about the particular proposal on Washington County. Most of you are probably well aware also of the history of the program. It was created in 1994 as an alternative to the federal and state Superfund programs, and 1994 when it was created, there were 59 landfill sites out of the 112 that you see on the map on the right that were in the Superfund program. Currently, we have 92 of those 112 sites that are publicly owned and are bond eligible. In 1994, when the program was first started, the legislature initially authorized up to a total of $90 million of bonding authorization over a 10-year period. The intent of the program from the beginning was always to have kind of a split of funding sources between the bonding activities, money generated off of solid waste tax or fee, and then an effort that we call our insurance recovery effort, where we brought in money through a process I'll talk a little bit more about later. We used the bonding authorization for construction of remedial work at publicly owned landfills. In the time period from when it was originally authorized through the year 2000, we had spent about $33 million on remedial work. In the year 2000, there was a legislative change that canceled all unused bonds. Since that time, we've been back requesting authorizations for additional bonding monies. For the years 2001 through 2006, we received $47.6 million in bonding authorizations that we've used on construction projects, and our total bonding to date received for the program has been about $81 million. On the next page, page 14 in your group, I have two different pages here of various activities we do within the program. Our main responsibility in this program is to manage the risk to public health and the environment associated with these old landfills. For most of our sites, we complete waste investigations, either through digging to find extent of waste or through groundwater investigations that we do. We have a very extensive monitoring system within this program. We have over 6,000 monitoring points where we gather information on groundwater, surface water, and landfill gas generated from these sites. We've done a lot of work with waste relocation in the program. We've consolidated or relocated about 300 acres of waste, including picking up and completely removing eight different landfills within the program. We do a lot of cover installation work where we take old landfills and bring them up to current standards. We've installed over 41 enhanced cover systems. By doing that, we reduce the rainwater movement that moves down through the fill and creates the leachate that contaminates the groundwater. We also have a very active gas extraction system within our program. We have 21 active gas extraction systems at the landfills where we use them to manage the gases produced by the decomposition of garbage. Within any, for each year, we do collect and destroy about 14,000 tons of methane with these systems, which is about 40% of the methane that's generated from the landfills in our program. As Mr. Chair had noted, methane is one of our more potent greenhouse gases that we do try to control. These gas extraction systems also work extremely well for removing other volatile organics from the waste. On the next slide, slide 15, we do a lot of cover work where we've been using a lot of native grasses wherever possible. We have two active landfill gas to energy generation systems at our landfills, one up at the Anoka Ramsey landfill and the other at the WDE landfill in Andover. Those two sites, we're currently generating about 1.5 megawatts of electricity, enough to power about 1,000 homes. Within our program, we do have the potential for about 12 additional sites for generating electricity with a total capacity of somewhere between 8 and 10 megawatts that we're trying to work on also. One of the other activities we do is we have a lot of post-closure land use care that we do at our sites. We currently have about 7,400 acres in the program. Most of it's maintained in grassy cover. It does provide excellent wildlife habitat. The picture you see is actually from the Washington County landfill that we'll talk a little bit more about later. We're currently also working with the local units of government to work with them to develop land use plans to help us try and manage risk associated with future development around our sites. We do have a number of groundwater treatment systems in place. We have 9 active groundwater treatment systems at our landfills. We do have a total of 53 sites where we have either groundwater, surface water, or gas migration that's currently occurring off-site. We have 8 of our 112 landfills where we have groundwater contamination that have impacted private or municipal wells. Next slide, on slide 16, one of the questions that has been raised to us is why we've exceeded our original estimate of about $90 million. That original estimate was one that we established in 1994. At that time, there were 71 bond eligible sites out of the 106 landfills that were originally in the program. We've added a lot of the privately owned sites have been transferred in ownership to MPCA, making them now bond eligible. And also through legislative actions in 99 and 2000, we've added additional publicly owned sites to the Coles Landfill program. Construction costs have gone up quite a bit between 94 and now, and the $81 million that we spent in bonding so far through 2006 has done a pretty good job of taking us through the needed construction. Our total future bonding requests that we currently know of includes about 13 sites totaling about $31.4 million. That would bring our total bond for the whole program up to about $112 million.
If I could stop you for a second, Representative Wagenius has a question for you.
Not so much a question. I am troubled by your the way you're saying that the bonding was originally for construction costs. That wasn't the case. And so the implication you're taking from that is that it was for construction costs and we should bond additionally. Originally it was felt that folks in the future, or kids born today, should not have to pay for something that they did not create and that they were not responsible for, and they actually wouldn't even benefit from. The beneficiary of the landfill cleanup program. We're the industries and the haulers in Minnesota. So that's why we had a fee that was supposed to take care of the rest. So I just, the characterization is troubling to me because I don't think it's correct. The cap was put on specifically to make sure that future generations didn't have to pay for something they didn't create and were not responsible for.
I had an observation in that regard. And having been in the solid waste area, we had a solid waste fund, which had, you know, cash in the bank for many years. And it was unallotted at one time and zeroed out, and then there was a consolidation of funds into the environmental fund. So the PCA could be flexible and focus on emergent needs or chronically underfunded needs, and that wasn't necessarily a bad idea, but a lot of the things aren't bondable, and cleaning up old landfills is bondable, and it just sort of seemed to me that the PCA was able to bond for this now, and we used to have cash. I guess I would argue that might be one reason we were over, but I could be wrong. Representative Wiggins.
Well, just following up with that, the landfill cleanup program also had an insurance recovery program that went along with it. How much have you collected under the insurance recovery program?
Is it Mr. Lewis? Okay. Sorry, I was spacing out when you said your name before. I just wanted to make sure I got it right.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wiggenius, the insurance recovery program has recovered for the state approximately $78 million. About half of that money goes into a closed landfill investment fund that is set up to fund the long-term O&M or operation and maintenance and care at these facilities, and the other half went into construction projects that were currently being done. So there was about $39 million that went into the construction activities, and then there are monies from the remediation fund generated through the solid waste fees that also go into construction activities. We've completed about $150 million in construction work, 80 of it from bond monies and the rest from other sources.
Representative Bankman at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To this point, does that include negotiated or voluntary payments from industry in the number you just represented, Mr. Lewis?
Mr. Lewis.
By negotiated amount.
$8 million.
Okay. The $8 million from 3M we'll cover a little bit later in the presentation.
No, it does not.
The numbers that I gave does not include any
so
money.
Responsible parties acting on their own isn't counted under that insurance recovery figure. Be over and above the $78 million.
Mr. Chair, that insurance recovery activity was something that was set up when the program was first introduced in 1994, and was set up because many of the landfills that were being brought into the program had insurance policies on them that covered pollution liability. As part of the program, we were able to assume those policies basically from those insurance companies. And when a number of them refused to pay on some of the work we were doing, we basically sued them and recovered that money through lawsuits that we had filed against them. As part of that, those people, the RPs, the owners and operators of those facilities, were basically taken out of the liability loop. So as part of the whole way the program was set up was to release those RPs and owners and operators from responsibility.
Continue.
Yeah. Okay. Please continue.
On slide 17, basically a little bit of the history of the Washington County site in particular. It's located in the town of Lake Elmo. It's one of our first generation landfills that basically was unlined. At that time, landfills were placed in one of two locations, either old gravel pits or swamps. this site took about 2.5 million cubic yards of material. Most of it was mixed municipal solid waste, with a smaller component of it being industrial waste. It operated between the years of 1969 and 1975. The site was designated as a federal Superfund site in 1984, mostly because of the volatile organic compound contamination that was occurring and the private water supplies that were being impacted by the VOCs. The site was accepted into the closed landfill program in 1996, and basically we're now responsible for the remediation and long-term care. The site is located in a sensitive fractured bedrock aquifer along a groundwater divide that makes it extremely difficult to contain contaminant plumes with groundwater pumping. The landfill is currently leaking PFCs as well as other contaminants into the groundwater. There have been a total of 150 private wells that have been impacted above the health advisory levels for PFCs. Plus, several of the municipal wells in the area have had impact because of the PFC contaminations as well. That north plume that's emanating from our Washington County landfill is somewhat complicated because it commingles with a plume from the Oakdale Superfund site. But that north plume, as we call it, is basically about 4 miles long north to south, about a mile and a half wide east to west, and very irregular in shape.
Don't mind, it happens all the time.
It's not just me. On slide 18.
Oh, I'm sorry, we did have a question from Richard Wigney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You note that this one is sensitive fractured bedrock aquifer. The purpose of the landfill cleanup program was to keep contamination out of the water. It wasn't to make parks and so we could show pictures of Bambi. It was to make sure the leachate was not getting out. And even though this program was accepted into the landfill cleanup program in 95, you didn't do anything about the water until 2005. As far as I was looking at the record, and there's no leachate monitoring system. There was put in wells in 2005. Am I right about that?
Mr. Lewis?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, no, that's not correct. When the program entered the Superfund program in 1984, it was because of VOC contamination. There was a groundwater pump-out system that was put in place that we maintained to address the VOC contamination, and we were very successful in controlling the VOC contamination from that site. We have a very active monitoring system in place, as well as an existing groundwater treatment system that's in place that we've maintained since that time. The additional problems that we're seeing at that site now were because of a new compound that prior to 2004, no one in the state of Minnesota was looking at, and we're now here mainly because of a new compound at that site. But the previous contamination that we knew about, we were actively managing and doing everything in our power to take care of it.
Okay.
Representative Wigney.
Well, the reason I even brought that up is I pulled up one of your annual reports on the Washington County landfill, and it's not clear in here at all that you were doing any. So that's a that's surprising to me, because I did read this report and I that wasn't in there.
Mr. Lewis, I don't know if you have any comment, but...
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I'd be more than happy to spend some time with you going over that report, because if it's not clear in there, there's something wrong with the way we're putting the report together, because we have been doing that at that site.
Okay,
Representative Wagenius.
I don't think it's appropriate for us to be talking off-site right now or in offices. This is an issue that belongs to the public, and I think we need to have these discussions here, so I appreciate your allowing me to ask questions, Representative Gardner.
Sure. Before we move on, I wanted to consult members quickly. we're all being pulled off of other committees and other places where we have to be, and we do have three bills that we actually do need to move to environmental finance today, and our vice chair, Representative Moe, has about 10 minutes, and I'd like to, my bill I got to hear, and he'll share, and then we'd have the other two heard out, but then I'd like to have the folks from Woodbury, since that's an informational hearing, but we'll give you all the time we can until they take us out. Does that work for you? Well, your bill, Representative Bunn, does not actually yet reside in this subcommittee. It's still matriculating down. And it was introduced today, and I guess it's in the Committee on Finance, and it hasn't actually made it down here. But we certainly would give you a full informational hearing, and this committee could act on that bill on another day, too. If I could ask you maybe to get through your page 19, and we can hold off on these special parts, and then we can take action on those other bills, if that works for you. You said very persuasively.
Yes, with however you would like it,
okay.
Mr. Chair. The only other thing I wanted to spend a little bit of time on, by little mean I mean a little, the question has been raised about whether or not 3M ought to be required to pay, and there's a number of bullets here to try and address that question. In the landfill, in the closed landfill program and the statute that started the program, there basically was a prohibition for us going back after RPs and owners and operators. The program was set up as an alternative to the federal Superfund program, and if we were to go back and try and address the cleanup of this site in another way, from the information we have available to us, there were over 40 different commercial haulers that took waste to that site. There's over 60 businesses and industries that direct hauled to that site, and the problems in landfills of trying to associate different chemicals with individuals gets extremely complicated. With that, maybe if I skip to the very end.
I'm sorry, Representative Clark has a question.
Mr. Chairman, Stephen has a list, but the reason it's the one trouble here is because of one compound, right, created by one company, not by a lot of other compounds that may have come from other, these other companies, it's one compound, not by the PFC, right? So that's not only created by 3M, that wasn't created there by any other company.
Mr.
Lewis?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, I'm sorry, I'm kind of skipping over a few points I probably should have made to try and get done, but the PFC contamination is one issue that we're trying to address at that site. That site in our program would need a cover upgrade as well as additional work to the gas extraction system that would cost between $5 and $8 million. Whether there are PFCs there or not. We do not know, as far as we know, 3M was the major contributor of PFCs, but PFCs do come from other activities. We see it a lot within metal plating operations. Firefighting activities have a lot of PFCs associated with firefighting foam. And so for us to be able to say that 3M was the only cause of the PFC contamination there, we can't really say that. They were one of the major companies that produced that compound, and so if you want to go back that way, then yes, they could be held responsible, but not under our closed landfill statute.
Representative Clark.
Well, but we're talking about a certain type of PFC here, right? I mean, that can be traced back to 3M.
Mr. Lewis?
The contamination at the Washington County landfill is two different PFC compounds that we're aware of. PFOA and PFBA are two of the PFC compounds that are causing the public water drinking concerns at that site. Those compounds are located there. The one compound that we don't see there that we see at some other sites is PFOS, but the PFOA and the PFBA that is there could come from a number of different sources.
For example.
Mr. Lewis?
I guess that I kind of tried to briefly say it could come from other compounds that were made by other companies. We see PFBA, especially in Gore-Tex fabrics, in nonstick cookware, whether some of those compounds are breaking down and leaving that landfill, I guess we don't know for sure. And the other area that we see a lot of the PFBA showing up is in some of the firefighting foams.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark?
And the manufacturer of those products, the source of the manufacturer for those products, for the Gore-Tex, for the non-stick, for the foams?
Mr. Lewis?
I guess I'm not an expert at that, but my understanding is that some of those materials were made, or most of those materials were made by 3M, but some of those materials were also made by DuPont Corporation.
President Clark.
Was the 3M, they sell off their patent for that to DuPont? Is that how it got over to DuPont?
Mr. Lewis?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, I don't know for sure on that.
I think
to
answer all these questions, it would be helpful if you could
Representative Wagini, you said a question?
Not so much a question, but I am glad you're going to take some time to further look into this, because two issues just leap at me. There is a dig and move proposal that was rated almost as well as this, as the one that PCA is doing, and additional expense. But I do think we need to look at that, and I think that is Representative Bunn's proposal. So I think we have to have that discussion. And I also think we have to have the discussion of the difference between a requirement for 3M to pay, and I understand we cannot take them to court and require them to pay, but there are moral obligations as well as legal obligations, and I don't see that Representative Clark's constituents, the Representative Gardner's constituents, the Representative Moore's constituents, or any of the others, I don't know why they should be paying when they were not responsible and they didn't know about it, didn't create it, and it's a little disingenuous to say that, it's a lot disingenuous to say that 3M, there might be other contributors here. Clearly, the biggest contributor is 3M, and we need to clean up because of that. There is such a thing as corporate responsibility, and I hope that has not lost value in Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased that you're going to be looking into this in more depth and looking at how we should fix the situation.
Thank you, Representative Wagini. Before we do that, I wanted to get on process here too. Representative Bunn, since this subcommittee is going to meet before we have to report out all our stuff from environmental finance, I think your bill is just going to reside in environmental finance, and then action will take place there. But we'll be glad to have the informational hearing today. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To this point, and I agree with Representative Clark and Representative Wagenius that this is serious. And the reality is, I mean, I'll just say it, I think most of that stuff came from 3M. But I'm also going to say, folks, they stepped forward with $8 million. The people up on the Iron Range took their money and went back east. They didn't give us any money. The rest of the state is paying all the bills for the people that abandoned us on the Iron Range. 3M has not abandoned us. We're going to work with them and get it done. But I think we better put things into context. They came to the table with $8 million. The people on the Iron Range ditched us and left. And it's just as serious of an issue. So the point made that we need to clean it up and that we should push 3M in the direction of corporate responsibility. But at the same point, they're providing great jobs for us here, and they stayed here through thick and thin. They've been admitting that we got to deal with this problem, and I think they're doing it in a positive way. And I'm not here to say we shouldn't let them off and not take more money than $8 million. I recommended they pay more than $8 million, and I'm going to keep fighting for it. But I think we should put it in the context of what how we've been treated up on Iron Range, and there those people took the money and ditched us.
Very good. Ed, you wrapped up on your page 19 part there?
Okay.
For the moment, we're going to take a pause in the action quick to take action on one bill anyway. I'm going to turn this over to Representative Moe just so we can get that reported out.
Representative Garner moved House File 3005 passed, and he was the environment at the House File.
Thanks, Representative Moe. This is actually part of the DNR's proposal for $1 million for bond proceeds to do groundwater quality monitoring in the Twin Cities metro area. It's a small part of what we actually need over the long term, but it's a good start, and I would recommend that we approve it. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for high quality piece of legislation? Okay, Representative Garner, any closing comments?
No, that's it.
All those in favor of House File 3005 passing, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes.
Thank you, Representative. Golly. Representative Brown, can you do this real quick? You don't have a whole troop of people from now, but
I do, actually.
You do? Oh, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Representative Brown.
Can I at least invite up our mayor to give the brief summary of this? I'm sure he can do this in record time.
Thank you. Chair will move House File 2006 to recommend a pass and move on to environmental finance. Good.
Thank you, Chairman Gardner.
Say your name and affiliation
sure.
For the record.
My name is Randall Erdman, Mayor, City of Albert Lea. Along with me, I brought our environmental engineer, Steve Wirtz, and in the back of the room is one of our counselors, Counselor Olson. The Albert Lea Dump Site, or Edgewater Park Project, is what we have before you. We were fortunate enough to have some help in the past where we were allotted $3.65 million on the 2006 bonding bill, but the cost since that and the engineer's estimates have escalated, so the project is going to run between $5 million and $6.1 million. The original contamination was found in 1989. This is a project that is high on the MPCA's list, and also on the city's list, and we're working with the Shell Rock River Watershed District in Fremont County to solve this problem. This is a closed landfill leaking into Fountain Lake, which would be here. This would be our Lake of the Isles or Lake Minnetonka. So it is a serious problem. The engineers estimate that there's about 5 gallons a minute of leachate quality merchandise leaking into Fountain Lake. This project is ready to go. Our total request is an additional $2.96 million. We're requesting additional money for road construction through the park. And we also have some demolition landfill material on our Blazing Star Landing site, which is the former farmland food site. And if some of you remember in 2001, we had a tragic fire in the farmland foods plant burned to the ground and the loss of 500 jobs in the community. So our request is $2.96 million to go along with this will put people back to work. It's a good project, and we're anxious to get at it and solve the problem. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much. Questions to the bill?
Hearing none, let me do a hit count here.
We still have four. That's great. Any closing comments? Representative Brown sits next to me on the floor, so she's going to...
No, our closing comment would be just thank you so much for hearing the bill, and we would hope you would consider it high priority. Thank you.
Great, and this bill would just go straight to environmental finance for, you know, as we consider the overall bonding proposal. I will renew my motion that House File 2806 be recommended to pass and be moved on to environmental finance. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion is adopted. The bill has moved on to environmental finance.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming up and thanks for waiting.
Thank you.
Okay, I understand Representative Oginek and Jill will take 1 minute.
That would be helpful.
This is where we get to ask you questions now, Representative. Let's see, Representative McGinnis, since you're ex officio on this committee, I'll go ahead and move your bill. House File 2957 be recommended to pass and move to environmental finance. Representative McGinnis.
Thank you, and thank you for moving the bill. This is essentially a bonding proposal for design work and construction, the additional construction at a wastewater treatment system that would be necessary for the water to be used for industry. Unfortunately, I'm going to tell you that Fargo is already ahead of us in doing this. This
just
is
don't
true.
Say Iowa, then you could really
This is true. They are using wastewater effluent to feed an ethanol plant. And hopefully we can make up some time here with this bill that would be grants. I will tell you one more thing. In your packet is a summary from LPCMR proposal several years ago where they determined the feasibility, said yes, it is feasible, and they made some recommendations, and it said do demonstration projects. That's one of that. Do demonstration projects, and it will, it's good for the... for increasing our water supply. So that's it in a nutshell, but I would be glad to answer questions, except about Fargo.
And Representative Oginek, this looks like the executive summary from the LCCMR proposal on prospects for doing this, and now we're actually following up.
It was actually the report to LCCMR and the executive summary of the report, which is that thick, and I didn't bring here.
Very good. Thank you for not doing that. Questions to the bill? Very good. Any closing comments, Representative Gideon?
I hope to pass it, please.
Very good. The chair renews his motion to pass House File 2957 and send it to Environmental Finance. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted, and the bill is passed, and we'll move on to environmental finance. Thank you, Representative Dean. Representative Vaughn, you now have our undivided attention, and I apologize for that. She also sits near me on the House floor, so I'm going to hear about that later.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing us time for an informational meeting, and then we'll, as you said, you'll be taking out the full Environmental Finance Committee. Because of that situation, we're not even going to move this bill, right? Because it's not to you.
That's
yet,
correct.
Right?
The bill will, it's going to stop in Environmental Finance.
Can any members have the bill draft and the amendment in front of them, just so they understand the wording of the bill? But let me just read it to you. First of all, it says blank dollars, and I'll explain that in just a moment, is appropriated from the bond proceeds fund to the Pollution Control Agency to design and construct remedial systems, and this is with the amendment, for or otherwise implement remediation of the Washington County landfill in accordance with the closed landfill program under Minnesota statutes, section X. In the blank that is the dollars, I am going to amend in the Environmental Finance Committee the amount of $59 million, and I'll explain that just in a moment. So the nature of the amendment was to include in the discussion that our local communities, first of all, in your packet, let me back just you have a couple things. First of all, you have a letter from the City of Woodbury that they submitted previously in support of bonding for this initiative. Also a letter from the city of Lake Elmo in support of bonding for this initiative. And I want to explain that this landfill, it's called the Washington County Closed Landfill, is located in the city of Lake Elmo. It so is the source of a pollution plume that includes Lake Elmo and the upper half of Woodbury. It also probably leaks somewhat into the Oakdale area as well. So the cities of Lake Elmo, Woodbury, and Oakdale all have concerns and are experiencing pollution from this source at this time, and that's why they're all engaged in this discussion. As you just heard, the governor has requested, and the CCA are asking for $15 million. This is in addition to the $8 million for 3M, with a total of $23 million for a particular option, a dig and line and then refill option that they are proposing as their preferred option. The site had a number of other options studied at the time. I left this number blank in the original writing of this bill for two reasons. First of all, and MPCA might like to address this in a moment if there's time today, I have seen multiple documents with different numbers even for the dig and line option. Your request implies $23 million total, but at the Lake Elmo hearing with the community members in November, the figure on the option sheet was $27 million. And then I saw another document while having a discussion with folks at Lake Elmo that had approximately $31 million. So I'm not even sure for the one option, the dig and line option, which is being recommended by the agency, that we have a hard and fast number of what's required to move this project forward. So they might be able to explain that further. So that's one reason I left it blank. And secondly, I left it blank and then am filling in today verbally and then for the Environmental Finance Committee the number $59 million because the options were ranked of the six options examined. They range from do nothing all the way up to a plasma torch for $200 million to remediate this landfill. The two options that came out highest were with the lowest number, which was good, with a dig and line, and then just with a 1 point difference was the dig and truck option. So they're essentially, you know, 1 point off on the rankings for points in their analysis by the consultant. The community members, you know, we haven't had the formal larger community public hearing on that. It's not until this Thursday evening. But from the small meetings that have taken place, both with residents directly adjacent to the landfill and at various city council discussions, the general sense I had from the public and from public officials at those meetings is that they would prefer a more permanent option, a dig and truck option for this site. And not just in for the reasons that, you know, not in my backyard. It's that this landfill, like so many, is a formal gravel pit that the Minnesota Geological Survey would rate the soils underneath this as at very high risk for contamination. As you'll see in the handout MPCA provided today, this waste is currently sitting in the groundwater in this unlined landfill. So this is a site that the soils are such that it's really a very inappropriate place to dispose of waste, that particularly of the kind that we've now discovered with PFCs that flow very easily in groundwater systems and disseminate in the environment. What I want to stress on you today is that, first of all, as you've heard, this is a state responsibility. So the issue of whether it's bonding or a combination of bonding with some other sources for this program, whether it's the solid waste fees or insurance fees or whatever, it's a state responsibility to work this out. And secondly, that it's a state responsibility in the view of my constituents and my city officials and community that they work this out in the next several months and start remediation in the next year. Under the preferred option CCA has offered, they are talking about starting this remediation work this summer and taking about a three-year period for that particular option. So if you are to consider other options for funding, we would hope that they would at least be expedited in a way that would not delay this any further. Relative to the other landfills being considered, there's only a few of these landfills that are just direct public threat to water systems, private or public, at this time in this program. And this particular one is affecting tens of thousands of households in a 20 to 60 mile square area. The reasons I say that range, we have a northern plume of PFCs in Sirius and a southern plume. This is probably just for the northern plume, this site, the Lake Elmo, the Oakdale, in North Clay Woodbury. We're talking about a 20-square-mile area with tens of thousands of households whose drinking water is already affected right now and has been for a number of years, unknown time span. And some of those people are already on bottled water, filter systems, etc. My own lake in the middle of my community, Lake Elmo, has 7 PFCs in it that flowed above ground from the Oakdale site at one time. So our lakes already have these in it as well. But we're most concerned here in terms of the emergency nature of this and the priority for this is that it's the groundwater systems throughout the entire neighborhood. I have brought with me today the mayor of Lake Elmo and the city administrator of Woodbury to have a few comments about the significance of this for their communities. I also met with the mayor of Woodbury just this morning to talk about this further. And we'll start with the mayor of Lake Elmo.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dean Johnston. I'm the mayor of the city of Lake Elmo. As already indicated, the city of Lake Elmo is the home of the Washington County Landfill, which was originally permitted as a residential waste landfill 40 years ago. A lot of decisions have been made in the last 40 years that if we had the benefit of 2020 hindsight, we'd probably have made differently. We probably wouldn't have put industrial chemicals into a residential landfill. We probably would have been more sensitive to the fact that taking the volatile organics out might have an impact on moving other chemicals around. We didn't know those things when those decisions were made. What we do know now is that we have significant groundwater contamination. It's affecting our residents. It's affecting the confidence of the residents in the public process. And they would like to see, and I would like to see, a permanent solution. We need to take care of the fact that chemicals are dripping into the groundwater as we speak. That needs to be stopped, and we would like a permanent solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Johnston. Please go ahead.
Well, my name is Clint Gridley, City Administrator for the City of Woodbury, and Representative Vaughn and Mayor Johnston said it very well. But simply speaking, there are a few responsibilities as important as providing clean drinking water to our residents. And we have over 20,000 customers that we provide drinking water. This drinking water and its quality is now in question. And as the two here stated, this needs to be taken care of as a state responsibility. It's a fundamental service. It's of critical importance because of the speed by which those chemicals are traveling into the groundwater. So please, as we've said, take care of the problem permanently.
Thank you. What's your pleasure, Representative?
Well, I just want to make a couple more comments and any questions you might have, or if MPCA wants to address anything related to the issues I raised about the cost of the truck and line option. But bottom line, first of all, this issue of the public health. I would think, I recently wrote a column on this, that in terms of the overall bonding package this year, when we have so many demands on it, items that relate to public health and public safety, I think, have to be top of our list in various ways. Zoos are great, convention centers are great, all the, parks and trails are great, but bottom line, across ideological divides, political ideological divides, I think people agree that the primary role of government is for public safety and protection of public health. Secondly, I hate to see, we just had Albert Lee up here, the fact that there might be some discussion, I heard Ben on the Senate side, that we might be making decisions to trade off cleaning up one person's landfill, one district's landfill, this is another district's landfill, when they both might be affecting drinking water or key water resources. If that's the case, we're not fulfilling our responsibility as a state. If they're affecting drinking water and public health, they are a responsibility. They should be a priority with bonding, and they shouldn't be pitched one against the other. Thirdly, the importance of moving this along. Again, I respect the right of the legislator to question PCA activities and PCA's decisions about funding, whether solid waste fees should be raised or other kinds of things should be done, but that from our perspective, in the citizens' perspective, what's most important is we now move this along. So if the only way to have adequate funds for this in the next year to start this process is bonding, then we support significant bonding for this program. If other methods can be identified that would not delay this significantly, we are open to that discussion, but I have not heard concrete proposals that would achieve that this time, and I commend you all for exploring that further at another meeting. But but if that has not been resolved in the next few days before you make your bonding recommendations, I very much request that this be given the bonding attention it deserves if those other issues cannot be worked out at this time. So again, just the importance of this to the public health and the importance of going forward with a bonding request for this if we have not identified another way to fund this in a timely fashion.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. I have Representative Clark, Representative Virginius, and then I had a question. And we'll wait until they kick us out, but we have environmental policy. Representative, you can afford it. Representative Clark.
I just have a quick question. I understand the $59 million bob from 23, is that because of the proposal to dig on trucks?
Yes.
And I'd like to know, I guess, if it's trucking, whose backyard is it being trucked to?
Representative Bunn.
Chair Gardner, Representative Clark, when the various options were presented to the small community meeting of residents, the dig and truck price tag was approximately $67 million for the capital cost and about $87,000 annually, compared to that, at that time the dig and line option was listed at $27.6 million with $210,000 annually. With that option. So the 59 was subtracting the 3M $8 million commitment from the 67 to get the $59 million for that option. In terms of the where it trucked to, they said they had been looking at one site in Minnesota and also sites in Wisconsin. And again, I think the key thing there is whether those sites are appropriate sites for this kind of waste. Either they are in very heavily clay areas. If there are other gravel pits, I agree with you, we need to be examining that are on fractured soils, then that we need to find appropriate sites in other locations that are clay or don't have, are not geologically determined to be at high risk of water contamination and not fractured, all those kinds of things. So I think the state needs to examine this issue of where we're siting things and what we're allowing at various sites and make sure if we are trucking to protect geologically sensitive sites, that those other sites are not geologically sensitive and are appropriate for long-term storage of waste.
Well, Mr. Terry, I guess I'm wondering, since it's being proposed, somebody must have an idea somewhere.
They can come up and answer that, but they mentioned one they were looking at in Buffalo, but they weren't positive they could accept the waste, and I don't know the nature of that landfill, and I do not know the specific site or sites they were considering.
The Buffalo site would be a Veolia landfill, I believe, and there's a French company that decided to call everything Veolia because they thought it would be easier to remember. I don't know what. And of course, Rosemont, the SKB folks, have got an industrial waste landfill there, too. Representative Virginia.
Thank you. I really understand the urgency of what you want to do. The problem I see that is not the funding as the first problem, but the decision of which route we're going to take, because you don't know how to fund until you've picked your route. So help me out here, because I bet you all have done some work here. We're talking about a permanent solution, and I think when you are talking about a lined landfill in place, you are questioning how long that liner will last. And I haven't worked in this area for a while, but it's my recollection that nobody would guarantee a liner at all. I mean, that an insurance company will not guarantee a liner. So you want to go to a place that is clay and stable. So I guess I'd like it if you all have done some work to be able to tell us how long you can expect a liner to last in your condition, and are we just procrastinating, having to do it all over again? And I'd like to hear PCA respond to on both issues. How long the liner would last, will an insurance company insure it?
Representative Bunn.
Representative Gardner, I'll give you what I recall from our meetings, but then they can give their final answer on that. This question was asked, not the insurance question, but the other question at a couple of meetings. I've also heard asked and answered in the context of the Playa landfill that we're considering in our area as well. And I've heard, you know, for certain, you know, that they think definitely it would be 30 to 50 years, could be up to 100 years, but they don't know precisely. Secondly, given that these technologies, the liners, have not even been used in most places for 30 to 50 years yet, that's all, you know, speculation to some extent. So maybe CCA should come up and...
Come on down, Mr. Lewis. No need to reintroduce yourself, but fire away.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, to address the liner question, our engineers tell us that basically the liner material will last for a long, long period of time. The problem you typically have is that that liner material, if it's not installed properly and as ground settles beneath it, develops tears and rips. But the liner itself would last for a long, long time. There's no question in our mind that removing material from that site would be a benefit to the long-term maintenance of PFCs in that particular area. And we would definitely, if we looked at that option, make sure that the facility it was taken to would be better than where it's currently located. The problem we had was the financial consideration on our part. We try to operate in a program to do the best we can with the money we're given, and we really felt that asking for the larger amount was going to be very problematic for us, and so we didn't request for the larger amount.
A long time is not particularly helpful for me. It gives me a sense of years, and when I talk about an insurance company insuring, it is insuring the liner, not the landfill, but insuring the liner. Is this help me out here,
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius? We actually asked that question of the liner manufacturer that we utilize for this program. And the answer they gave us was that that liner material will last for 100 years plus.
And how did they know?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius.
UL inspectors jumping up and down on us.
I cannot answer your question on how they could make that determination. These materials have not been around 100 years, and so I guess they're probably projections based on the testing that they do. But as far as, you know, an insurance, you're correct. There is no insurance company that would insure a liner system or a landfill like that. We're basing our decisions on our experience with working with these landfill systems for the last 15 years and the knowledge that we've accumulated from doing that, but we don't have any guarantees either.
It's a daunting problem. Any other comments, Representative Bunn? I had a question.
I have a comment, but you want to hear your question first?
Oh, sure. Well, now the PFOF, I think it is actually showing up in Lake Johanna and Arden Hills, which is right down the road from my district. Which, you know, I think it's been found in Lake Calhoun as well. Very curious thing. But knowing how leachate systems work, most landfills that have leachate systems funnel that leachate into sewage treatment, which then goes into whatever, and you have to know where the stuff is going. So I guess my question would be, let's say we do put this at another state-of-the-art landfill, and the leachate system is collecting the rainwater that flows through and so on, you pump that out, but unless you keep that leachate on site, it's going to migrate somewhere else again, right?
Mr. Chair, that would be correct. The system that we were proposing for the Washington County landfill would have a leachate collection, and then we would actually inject that waste back into the fill to basically recirculate it within that line system.
The leachate recirculation thing?
Correct.
Permit that differently? It's not a bioreactor, though. It's leachate recirculation.
That's correct. The waste material that we're dealing with here is older. It's basically quit taking waste in 1975, and so we wouldn't think of it as a bioreactor type situation. But you know, we would be containing that waste on site. Other landfills that have leachate collection systems do different things with them. Some of them do actually recirculate. Some of them do take that leachate to most likely wastewater treatment plants. A few of them actually land apply those leachates in other areas under permit as well. But you're right, we would need to take a look at whether or not that leachate and how it's being handled, whether it's being discharged to a wastewater treatment plant or what.
But in the meantime, you need to get something in there, get stuff out of there, or get something under it now so that you stop the source problem. Well, I don't envy any of you for having to deal with this. Did you have any closing comments, Representative Vine?
Well, just that I appreciate Mr. Lewis saying that, in fact, you know, a more permanent solution would be desirable if they were being pragmatic, as agencies often have to be, and also legislators have to be in terms of funding issues. But, you know, again, it's that back to the issue, pay now or pay later. And if we have to dig this entire landfill up again in 30 to 40 years to keep TFCs from re-disseminating into this portion of Washington County, will it have saved us money?
We have just paid off the bond.
And we have just paid off the first bond. You know, so I think I would hope that we have a very serious conversation about that. And I recall from the PCA's original, you know, larger bonding document that, you know, this and other systems they were estimating could be $199 million more funds. And if we increase this to a dig and truck, I'm sure that's a larger number than that one. So we have a very serious problem on our hands, but it is a state responsibility, and it is a primary state responsibility to protect the public health and protect our drinking water. So I look forward to continuing to engage in that very serious discussion and finding solutions to this. So thank you so much for allowing us to have this time today.
Oh, my pleasure, and I'm sorry that you had to wait, but we really wanted to make sure we gave you a thorough airing.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to close, unless anyone else had any other comments, but the thing I was going to say is one thing I'd like to do in this subcommittee, and I meant to do it just before we ended the interim, but time kind of ran out, is really hear from the cities who have had to deal with these contamination issues. I have one city in my district, North Oaks, that has dealt with a relatively, a much smaller mm-hmm. problem with vinyl chloride, but, you know, there's a slug of plume that's gotten away, so you couldn't possibly dig it out, and it's not fun to deal with for anybody involved. But I would like to hear from cities on how they've had to cope, because it's really up to the cities to decide where their water comes from, their drinking water, and where the thirst protection, drinking water thirst protection can be. And the state has certain mandates to deal with the closed landfill cleanup program and protecting state waters. I guess I would like to work a little bit on how the communication among all those units of government work. I think it might be enlightening to see if there's ways we can do that better. So that was it. But we'll have to find a time to do that. Are there any other questions, comments, announcements? Very good. This meeting is adjourned.